Blog Talk Radio.
Old pirate Jesse Rabbi sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit. But my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but the woodsouths can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs. Redemption song. Redemption song. Emancipate yourself from mental slavery. Our mind. Oh, have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them are gonna stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, someday it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you hear to sing songs of freedom? Is all I ever had, redemption song. All I ever had, redemption song. These songs of freedom, songs of freedom.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, friends, online friends. I'm so glad you joined us today for the Mary Diaz Demands More Than Pardons and Paroles. That's the Mary Diaz and Human Conflicts Organization demand more pardons, but they also demand more pardons and paroles and compassionate releases. They also demand that people with a significant case of innocence get retrials. They would like to see people who are sick, elderly, diseased, hospice, be released on compassionate release. They would like for people who've served their minimum sentences and don't have behavior that seems and is backed up by the record to be too erratic or criminal. You know, many, many people are still in jail, at age 40 and 50 and even 70 and 80 for offenses they committed when they were basically children or in their early youth. And we feel that people who have been in jail for that length of time, a lifetime, some of them, should be released. We have all kinds of methods now that parolees can be, their whereabouts can be monitored better, much better, than when they went in jail, some of them 50 years ago, 40 years ago. The monitoring devices that we have now, they did not have back then. So these people are not a threat to society. Most of them might even have a strong case of innocence. But in any case, they're convicts, and we realize that. But we have all kinds of methods for monitoring that were not possible when they went in jail, many of them. And so there is no reason to keep a man or woman in jail 50 years over something they did while they were a teenager. That is very unfair, and it is very unfair not only to the inmates and their families, but also to taxpayers. Taxpayers are paying over $100 billion, with a B, dollars per year, over that amount, to incarcerate 2.3 million, with an M, inmates. And many of them have been thoroughly rehabilitated. They've completed recommended classwork. They've learned new skills. They've learned the error of their ways. They like a second chance. And as I said, we have all kinds of monitoring equipment and devices that we didn't used to have. So these people can be more effectively supervised than ever before. We have cell phones that have RFID chips. We have ankle bracelets that are very sensitive. If they took it off, we would know it. So there's no reason for these people to remain incarcerated. On our streets now, place you go, there are cameras. They just simply could not get away. They could not commit crimes and get away. They could not fail to go to see their parole officer and their probation officers and stay monitored. They could not miss doing that because of all the advances in technology that we have nowadays. So let's join with Mary Diaz and Human Complex Organization and demand more pardons and paroles. Give our brothers and sisters who are behind bars their second chance, something they've been hoping for and praying for. And I think that if a person committed an offense over 20 years ago or whatever their minimum sentence was, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, and if they've conducted themselves circumspectly while they were behind bars, they've conducted themselves well, and they have not hurt anyone while they were incarcerated. They've not been stealing from their fellow inmates. Give them, please, a second chance. This is the Mary Diaz and Human Complex Organization. Demand more paroles. That's the name of this show. I want to talk to you very briefly about a gentleman I work with here at Human Rights Demand Channel, who got his second chance. His name is Johnny Strozier, Strozier. He got his second chance. He's been incarcerated for 46 years of his life, from age 10 to his mid-50s. And he finally got his parole. And he finally got his parole, and we are so happy for him. We really are. And we would like for him to have a successful reentry. he's having difficulty right now. Jenny Strozier is a man who has a passion for helping other inmates to reenter society successfully. He has a passion for doing that. And we want to congratulate him and his mentors, the people who encouraged him. He got a lot of encouragement from the prison chaplain, and he got a lot of encouragement even from his warden, the last warden that he was in his facility. He got encouragement from Christians among the inmate population, because Jenny Strozier became a Christian in the 1980s, and he started attending church in prison, and he still attends church now that he's been out since 2013. He attends church sometimes 2 and 3 times a week. He was attending church and networking with Christians who have a desire to help inmates reacclimate themselves back to society when they're released. He's been networking with people who share his concern for prisoners and his concern for parolees. Most of them are Christian people. He has a show here on Human Rights Demand that's on air at 9 p.m. Eastern Time Saturday night. That's on the East Coast, 9 p.m. Eastern Time on Saturday nights. I want to invite you to listen to him and his guests. As I said, they're church members mostly, but they're also people from civic and social organizations, and they're people who have been incarcerated and who have successfully reentered society. One night he interviewed a young man, well, not so very young. This man, I guess he's in his early 40s, because he spent a time in jail, in prison. But since he's gotten out of prison, he's done marvelous things. He graduated from DeBry, familiar with that college. You know that it comes highly recommended. And he graduated from DeBry College, and he has gone on with his life. These people usually have some trouble ascertaining good jobs. And that is unfortunate. I have another call coming in. Let me let you listen to Lift Every Voice and think about the things we're saying. Harmony,
That's a cappella. Lift every voice. Beautiful.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, that was beautiful. That's called the Black National Anthem. You know, a great many of our prisoners happen to be blacks. They have a very high rate of incarceration. And that is primarily because of, I think, the war on drugs and the way that war was conducted, which was extremely racist. And we're going to be talking on Human Rights Demand with a former DEA agent who said he was told not to go into white areas and conduct drug busts. So the war on drugs was conducted very racially biased. And that is why the rate among blacks is so much higher than it is among whites. And it's also higher among people who are Hispanic or Latino than it is among Caucasians. And overall, it's just a failed war. Like most wars, the poor and middle class do not usually win wars. They don't usually win wars. Even when they're sad, victorious, usually they come out of war much more damaged than people who have means. And we know that. So the war on drugs has been an experiment that caused many lives of our law officers as well as our citizenry, and we would like to see it end. We would like to see the war on drugs end, and we start treating people for their drug and alcohol addictions, and we give even drug dealers a second chance at life. Many of them were raised in dysfunctional families, even dysfunctional neighborhoods. And they have, most of them that we're speaking of now who are parole eligible, have been in jail for their minimum sentences, which are long sentences because they were given long sentences and they served that. But still, they're up for parole, but they never seem to get their paroles. They never seem to get paroled, especially in some states. I was told by Mary Diaz, I think it was last week, that Georgia has a better track record than some other states. I was glad to hear that. I know that our Governor Deal is interested in prison reform. As a matter of fact, the state of Georgia has opened the very first juvenile and the first prison charter school. So you've got young men and young women who are going to school, charter school. They're going to high school while behind bars. So a great many prisoners have taken advantage of these opportunities. This is the first charter school, I believe, in prison anywhere. But prisoners have had the opportunity to gain their high school diploma for some time, but I think they had to study on their own, and this is a charter school. So I want to congratulate Governor Deal on his having the foresight to recognize that people must have high school diplomas and basic skills to ever be a success and get out of the revolving door in and out of prisons and jails. And that's exactly what he said, not exactly in those words. And I want to congratulate my governor for doing that. Now, getting back to Johnny Strozier, as I said, he's had some difficulties lately. We're following his reentry as he helps others reenter. He is himself reentering society after 46 years of incarceration. And we are disappointed that it seems that the system, and this is the same Georgia system, is not as supportive of Johnny Strozier as I believe that it should be and could be. When you've got a young man, well, not even a young man, a little boy, 10 years old, in prison, who grew up in prison, who raised himself in that violent and very dysfunctional environment and managed to live, that alone is an accomplishment. And not only did he manage to live, but he managed to complete 46 years without killing anyone, which is by the grace of God. And now he's free, but not really. He's on parole. And his parole officer, Mrs. Hamilton, recently told Johnny Strozier that he could not plan to go to church. Sunday services mean a great deal to this man. It was his strength all the while he was in prison. It's what he held on to after he got converted in the 1980s. I think that it is very cruel and unnecessary. I think it's cruel and unusual punishment to prevent a parolee from going to church. But that is the stipulation that's now placed on Johnny Strozier. Why? Because his girlfriend answered his phone one day. He said he was in the gas station getting gas. The phone rang, and she answered it. You know how women are curious about who's calling someone they're dating, and also what's wrong with someone answering his phone. It's his phone. The government did not give it to him, as far as I know. But even if they did, it's his phone, and his lady friend answered it. And he was in the gas station, and he called them back. And they were angry because a young woman answered his phone. I think that is ridiculous to take away his privileges to be free on weekends and go to church. He's on house arrest now on weekends. Church is where he networks with people who are interested in reducing mass incarceration by helping release prisoners. That's his strength also, is to hear the word, hear the gospel, and stay encouraged, because people on parole like Johnny Strozier are faced with many challenges. And so we should not take away something that is so successful for him. It manages being in church, having that to look forward to every few days. It's his rock. It's how he stays focused and balanced, how he controls his emotions, how he keeps his thinking forward. And so we shouldn't want to tear that down. We should want to encourage people to practice their religion. Furthermore, parolees, do they still have constitutional rights? Do they still have the right to peaceful assembly? Do they still have freedom of religion? Do they still have free speech and freedom of press? Because I feel like there may be some hard feelings about him being a radio host. If you listen tomorrow night to Human Rights Demand at 9 p.m. Eastern, you should hear Johnny Strozier, and I invite you to do that. And I thank you for listening to that heartfelt plea by the state of Georgia to reconsider taking this man out of church, because the joy of the Lord is his strength. And do they want high recidivism? I know that prison investors do want high recidivism. Do they want people to stop helping prisoners? Are they punished for helping parolees? I think some people are punished for helping parolees, because unfortunately a great many of our prison investors are our government decision makers. They buy stock in private prisons and jails, and they benefit by keeping them full and they are punished if they don't keep them full because they signed contracts with private prison companies to keep them full. And if they do not keep them a certain capacity full, then the states can end up paying money to the prison companies and the jail companies and probably the probation, private probation companies. You know, the situation is this, though. If you sign a contract with someone to do something illegal, that contract is void. If crime is down to the point that the only way to keep them full is to commit crimes against parolees, keeping them long past their minimum sentences. If the only way to keep jails and prisons full is to commit crimes against black people and overly sentence them and even disregard innocence, if the only way to keep prisons and jails full is by revoking the parole of innocent men and women, we have had a situation like that that we presented to you here on the Mary Diaz Human Conflicts Organization, where a man of 84 had his this man was revoked. His parole was revoked because he had skills that the prison needed. And so they revoked his parole and pulled him back in. And they revoked his parole, saying that he had moved from his home address. And he had not moved. And statements from his landlord, his neighbors, his wife was at home, his dogs were at home, he had not moved. And he was working for a hotel company, and he often worked out of town, like many people work out of town. He was doing upholstery for them and also heating and air. And when they had jobs that needed that to be done in other cities or other states, I imagine he'd go do it. He was in parole, and he was on parole and living in Florida. Had been out of jail 19 years, paying his parole fees and working, supporting himself and his family. And he was put back in prison on the supposition that he had moved when he had proof that was not so. So if that happened to one person, I imagine it's happening to a good number of people, that the rug is being pulled back from under them in order to add to our mass incarceration numbers. And, of course, that is wrong, and it's being done, I believe, for prison profits. So we ask you to think about that. Now, my name is Mary Neal. Mary Diaz is the host of this show. She and Dr. Allurette are administrators of Human Conflicts Organization. I didn't have a chance to call them and let them know that I got the show on the air today, but I did send, I did post on their Facebook walls, but I have no guarantee that they saw that. I have their phone number saved at my Gmail account, but I don't like to open Gmail on other people's devices. I don't like to open my Gmail account on devices I'm not as familiar with as my own. And so I could not look up their phone numbers, and I apologize for that. I have had some trouble myself, very hectic trouble. My computer was destroyed on the 29th of September, right before my birthday. It's September 30th is my birthday, and my computer was destroyed on the 29th of September. And I guess it's my fault. I had the computer on and on the internet, And when the workmen came in to put down new floors for us, I was helping them, and I left my computer on, and it was on the internet. And I guess all the hackers had to do was just go in there and do what they do, and they did. So now it's not working. So that is what happens when you are advocating for justice in an unjust system. Justice in an unjust system. How does one attain justice in an unjust system, especially people who are particularly targeted for discrimination anyway because of our race? How do we obtain justice in an unjust system? Well, God's name, one of his names to me, is justice. And so I just rely on God, and I continue to be encouraged. When I read the word of God, I am encouraged. When I talk to people who have the same passion that I have for justice, whether or not this comes from a religious base. Because on Tuesday night, we have your Ralph Porter, Professor Betty Davis, a former activist lawyer and very much still a human rights activist, Ms. Lynn Stewart, former Black Panther Party member of the original Black Panther Party. I don't know if he's former, whether he's still active with the original Black Panther Party, but that's Larry Porter and others, Dick Minnelli, and others. We meet here on Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern, and we discuss political prisoners, and they let me discuss the problems that I help people with who are mentally ill and caught in the legal system. So that's on Tuesday night. So I'm giving you information about Saturday night. Jenny Strozier, who's a man who's reentering society after 46 years of incarceration, no murders. One thing that made his sentence be so long is that he escaped more than once. And each time you do something like that, your sentence is lengthened because they do catch people. That's why we should not be as afraid as people once were to make sure that prisoners exit jails and prisons after they serve their minimum sentence. There's less to fear because there's less opportunity to really escape for any length of time and do harm. And then I told you about Saturday night, the Ralph Porter What's Happening show, which is our political prisoners show. And the information that Ralph Porter and his panel is able to share with us is very invaluable because both Ralph Porter and Lynn Stewart are, as far as I know, in their late 70s or even their early 80s. I'm not sure. Very active, very involved. Still, injustice for you and me and for themselves, feel very dedicated to making this world a better place. But they remember things that you and I do not remember because we may not have been even conscious of what was happening during some of the times that they're able to tell us about, during some of the circumstances. And, of course, because they're very learned, they have kept abreast of everything as it unfolds. And it's so interesting to sit and listen to these people. Again, that's Larry Pinkney, Ralph Porter, Lynn Stewart, Betty Davis, Dick Minnelli, and others who have a few years on a lot of people who are right now in the situation facing legal charges or coming out of prisons even. They have some years on us, and they have been years well spent, full of working for liberation, always human rights activists. And so we've learned a great deal by tuning in on Saturday nights at 9 I'm sorry, on Tuesday nights at PM to report of what's happening. And I thank you for doing that. I want you to know you can see the whole schedule for Human Rights Demand Channel at my blog that's called Mary Loves Justice Radio. Mary Loves Justice Radio schedule. Just put that in. It's mljradio.blogspot.com. And that's BLOGSPOT. M for Mary, L for Loves, J for Justice. mljradio.blogspot.com. That will give you our entire schedule. We have some very exciting shows that are coming up within this month. I'm going to bring you sometime, hopefully within the next week, a woman who called me because her son, who's mentally ill, has been accused of a double homicide. Now, just like many, many families who have mentally ill dependents, they had tried to get him treatment months before this double homicide happened. Now, I'm not saying he did a double homicide. I'm saying he's accused of it. But before this accusation by police and district attorneys came up, he had been turned down for mental health treatment. And I believe that happened, if I'm not mistaken, it happened in the state of Georgia. And now this young man is facing a trial, and we're going to talk with his mother about that. Also, I had an email, not an email, but a Facebook message from a man named Keith, and I won't give his last name at this time, but he'd like to talk with us about Kelly Thomas. That is the mentally ill young man, 30-something years old, who was beaten to death by Fullerton County, California police officers. They were all, as far as I understand, acquitted. But this man would like to talk to us about his memories involving Kelly Thomas. That is the young man who was so pitifully beaten to a pulp and could not live with his injuries. He was killed by six police officers who beat him, and none of them were found guilty of the crimes, even though I understand that they did go to trial. We expect to have Keith on the show soon. I invited him for tonight at 9 p.m. Pacific time, which will be 10 p.m. Mountain, 11 p.m. Central, and 12 Atlanta time, Eastern time. We're going to have our Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill broadcast, and that's because we missed having it on Wednesday. That was my birthday, for one thing. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Everybody who said, oh, happy birthday, Mary Neal. I want to thank you for your well wishes, and I did have a beautiful birthday. And we have someone on air right now. I'm going to get them to speak, but come back tonight at 818-572-2947. That's 818-572-2947 for Assistance to the Incarcerated Mentally Ill. And I invited Keith, who knew personally Kelly Thomas since 1995. He's known him a long time. I invited him, but we're just writing to each other, so I'm not sure he will read the message in time. But we will have a good show. Here's our caller, 5405. How are you? 5405, you're on the air.
Hello, Mary. This is Anna. I'm just listening in. How are you doing today?
Hey, Anna, how are you? Oh, I'm so glad that you called. Wonderful for you to call. You saw the message on Facebook that we're on the air.
Yes, ma'am. I just walked in for my job, and I saw it. You know me. I'm here supporting everyone. You know, I'm a mother of a lifer, and I'd like to support any cause.
Well, I'm so glad, Anna.
Thank you.
You are so faithful. You really are so faithful. And I just thank God for you and people like you who share my passion for released inmates as well as for those who are still behind bars. And, you know, for me, it's a religious thing as well as something I enjoy. And for you, I think that you got into it once your son was incarcerated, especially for life, and you found a certain camaraderie with all the inmates. They got your sympathy, they got your attention, and you started communicating with people you met through your son being in the system. Why don't you talk to us about that right now? And if you don't mind, Mary, I always promise the audience that they'll hear part of this show in Spanish. Why don't you just talk to the audience about what it's like being the mother of a LIPER, and also the fact that your son was in solitary confinement torture for 9 years. So talk to us in Spanish about that, Anna.
Okay. Yo me llamo Ana. Soy una madre de un preso en Nueva York, en Pensilvania, que le dieron vida a la edad de 17 años. Hace más de 16 años que estoy peleando el caso de él. Él tenía 9 años en solitary confinement, apenas salió en mayo. Tiene 3 meses que está en solitary confinement porque ganamos una apelación que él no tenía que estar en lockdown. So, llegaron a un acuerdo, le hizo un programa que se llama STG para que él pudiera salir en population. En ese sentido, yo conocía a muchos presos que me estaban dando la mano para informarme la situación de mi hijo en el roto. Así es que yo tengo más de 2,000 presos que yo comunico en Pensilvania. La mayoría son lifers y tengo algunos en death row. Yo tengo mucha pasión por los familiares de los inmates. Mi pasión es ayudar a los inmates, no solamente mi hijo, todos. I'm going to say it in English. My name is Anna. I am a mother of a lifer in New York City. My son is in Pensilvania doing a double life sentence at the age of 17. I've been fighting my son's case for 16 years. He was in solitary confinement for 9 years because of a situation that happened at SCI Fayette. He was supposed to be in lockdown for 3 months, but it turned out to be 9. I got suspended also because of the situation that I don't shut up because I do fight for the rights of inmate. So they used that against me, and I was STG too. So they suspended me. It took 9 years to see my son. So in those 9 years, I met a lot of inmates that helped me to communicate with my son. Through them, I used to write letters. I wrote letters to them like they were my son, but they knew it was for Westside. So they used to pass the kite to my son and vice versa. My son used to write like they were them. And that's the only way I knew the situation with my son, that it was real bad. And that's when I said, if I don't fight and be the voices for these inmates in general, nobody is. And I have a lot of problems personal, but I always take time to support anyone in solitary confinement, mentally or unmentally, because I know how it is. I know how it is. Believe me, it's personal. And I say it all the time in faith, it's personal. Because it's not about my son. It's about the life of all inmates in general. And I'm going to support you, Mary, and anyone that are fighting the same battle, whether we will religion or not, is that I always put that on the side. Because even if I don't have that faith, I have a faith. I have a faith to fight. And I'm going to keep on fighting. I'm not young either. I'm 60. But I got strength of a 40-year-old woman. And I'm going to keep on fighting this battle. Not only for my son, because he's good right now. He's in solitary. His PCR appeal went through this week. I'm going to see the court in December. So my son is okay. But I have other inmates in the same situation that don't have a loved one or a family member to be their voice. That's why today my page is about inmates, the wrong convicted in Pennsylvania. And I'm going to put those pictures all day because I have a lot of pictures of inmates saying, you know, and thank you, Mary. Thank you for always being who you are, and you just like me. We fight for what we believe, and that's all it matters. And I thank you for always being there for me. And you know, I've been through a lot, but I always have time for the inmates, and that's my priority.
Anna, why don't you tell the audience how they can go to your Facebook page and see the pictures that you're putting up of the inmates that they could help?
They could go
tell them how to find you on Facebook.
They could find me. I'm open. My name is Anna. That's my name, because I don't have nothing to hide. I'm going to put up a lot of drawings and things that I've got from inmates in Pennsylvania, because of how they pay me when I send them packages for a little money. They just pay me.
Now, Anna's last name is Santana, S-A-N-T-A-N-A. The first name is Anna with one A, A-N-A, just one A. Just one N, A-N-A. Last name Santana, S-A-N-T-A-N-A. Now, is that how your name is placed on Facebook?
No, Mary, I got to correct you. My name is Anna Santiago.
Go ahead and spell it for the audience.
My name is A-N-A. Santiago is S-A-N-T-I-A-G-O. And you're welcome to be in my page. You see them, all those pictures and all those artworks, because that's how why I put them up there, so they can know that everybody's thinking about them. Everybody.
Yes, we are. Even the president has been to visit prisoners to leave, and though I don't think anything positive necessarily that I've heard of, no earth-shaking development from his visit, but he did visit. And also the Pope visited prison while he was here. Again, I haven't heard of any earth-shaking developments, but it shows that people in high places are thinking about prisoners. Now, did they just get in prison? No. They've been in prison all the time. But the problem is that we're making them think about prisoners. We're bringing this to the White House. We're taking it to the cathedrals. We're taking it to the churches. We're taking it to the clubs and organizations. We're taking it to the human rights organizations. We're saying, think about prisoners and what you should do to reduce mass incarceration, what you should do to rid our country of torture, what you should do in the name of justice. You know, I do it in the name of the Lord, but you don't have to do it in the name of the Lord. Do it in the name of justice, because you know you're wrong. And so we demand change. We demand releases after minimum sentences, unless you can show that these people are definitely a danger to society. We demand releases of everyone who has diseases and who's on hospice and who has health problems and who are aged. We demand their release because they're no danger to society, except that they're eating up our tax money that we need for schools, we need for our infrastructure, we need it for our senior citizens. They're using the tax money just to make prison profits, and we demand more pardons and paroles, more compassionate releases. And then we have people who are incarcerated who have great evidence of innocence, and they want new trials, and we demand that people who have great evidence of innocence get their new trials. We're looking for change. We're tired of paying $100 billion plus per year to fill the pockets of prison investors, jail investors, and parole probation officers. Private companies are doing that too. We're sick of you making a killing. You're not making a living. You're making a killing off of people who are disadvantaged, and who were mostly the disadvantaged who you actually sent to prison and jail in the first place. Again, I say most of the blacks who are incarcerated, it has to do with the war on drugs, and that war was skewed against people of color. It had unfair sentencing for black and brown people. And we're going to have on this show sometime within this month the former DEA agent who said that he was actually told not to handle do drug raids in white communities. He was told that. And he said, why can't I do drug raids in white communities? And he was told, because do you think these young white kids' fathers are going to put up with us jailing their sons? They will shut us down. We want to keep our job, don't we? And so that is wrong, and we're going to have him on the show, God willing, sometime this month. He happens to be a cousin of Dr. Randy Short, who is a tremendous voice for freedom and justice and liberty for everyone, Dr. Randy Short. And Dr. Randy Short has a fundraiser going, and I'm going to put it prominently on my page. He needs funds in order to travel to speaking engagements to help people in need. Right now he's working with the young man's family who was killed in a wheelchair. The young man is in a wheelchair, and police shot him so many times. And I want to say this to you before we go off the air, and that is, our First Amendment rights are under such tremendous fire that I can't even keep the same computer for 2 months straight. They destroyed my computer on September 29th. I now have to get another one. And before that, they destroyed my computer on July 3rd. And I had to get another one. You must realize that people who are in human rights advocacy spend a great deal of money to be able to communicate with you, much more than if we weren't doing this work. Because if you're not doing this work, you won't be attacked by hackers and stalkers like we are. The thing is, that goes with the territory. I'm not complaining, but I do want to remind you of your responsibility to help us to stay on the air. I have a fundraiser, Mary Loves Justice fundraiser, and if you open Dog Justice for the Mentally Ill, you will see at the top margin over on the left a little bitty box that says GoFundMe. They wouldn't let me have a normal size depository. So that's how effective we are. We're so effective that they're afraid to let me have a regular PayPal depository, a regular GoFundMe depository. Mine are just little letters in the upper left corner of my screen at Dog Justice for Mentally Ill. And I ask you to please deposit. Also, you can send funds to me through my email address at PayPal. If you have a PayPal account, or I believe even if you don't, you can just go in and send me funds from PayPal to my email address, and that is MaryLovesJustice@gmail.com. That's MaryLovesJustice@gmail.com. Send me a donation on the new computer. Right now I'm using a little tablet, in order to run this radio show. And that's ridiculous, because I'm working for your family and my family. I'm working for America to be more true to what she said on paper. But she said wonderful things on paper, but just like Martin Luther King said to America so many years ago, he said, all we say to America is, be true to what you said on paper. On paper, this is a country that's interested in equal rights, equal protection under the law, and many lofty ideals. But we're not putting that into practice. We're not demanding that it be put into practice. So we're here to make a human rights demand that America be true to the U.S. Constitution for everybody, that America be true to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights for everybody, be true to those documents, be true to what you wrote on paper. And so I want to thank you for joining us today. Again, my name is Mary Neal. Online, you can look me up, Mary Loves Justice. If you want to see some of the destruction that follows my articles that follows our radio shows, The Destruction by Hackers and Stalkers, please go to Bing, B-I-N-G, and put in my name, Mary Loves Justice. They have some of my films there because I use Google Screen Castify to capture my screen as I work, and you can see how, as I work, unseen hands are working to prevent my advocacy for human rights in America. That's wrong. That's unacceptable for me, and I hope it is for you. I changed my profile, not my profile, but my cover page at Facebook, and it says now that I have no respect for the Dred Scott decision or anyone who does. I don't have respect for the Dred Scott decision. I don't have respect for anyone who does observe the Dred Scott decision. The Dred Scott decision says that black men has no rights that a white man is bound to honor. And the Dred Scott decision also said that Negroes could not be citizens. And so I don't respect the Dred Scott decision. And I don't respect anyone who does observe that law. That law was outdated. It was made moot by the 14th Amendment, but some people say it wasn't. But what it was or was not, I have inalienable rights as a person. As a person, I have rights given to me by God that don't depend on your documents. You don't have to sign off on it. I signed my own Emancipation Proclamation like Martin Luther King Jr. recommended. And so I am a free woman. And tearing up my computers and sending armed stalkers around my home, these things that have happened within the last few weeks are unacceptable. Because I will continue to strive to help people who are less fortunate, yes, even less fortunate than I am. Because after all, even though I'm surrounded by citizens police in houses where you put them, even though you censor nearly every radio show and my articles, even though I live under tremendous constraints that I should not have to live under, I am still more free than the people that we're trying to help because they are being killed while in handcuffs. They are being dragged into showers and hot showered until the meat comes off their bones. That's Darren Rainey. They are being killed in such horrendous ways that the government won't even acknowledge that they killed them. And that is my brother, Larry Neal. Please look online for Wrongful Death of Larry Neal. I posted a letter at Facebook and at Google that's from Mr. Early Story. And he told us about another jailhouse death at Memphis Shelby County Jail. And this man who died, whose name was Gregory, he died there in the same jail facility where my brother did in 2002. He had been beaten to death by another mentally ill man, a larger one, and Mr. Gregory was described to me as being a slightly built, effeminate man, meaning he had a lot of female traits. And they were both let out together and told, according to Mr. Story, to fight to the finish. And naturally, the big guy won, and Mr. Gregory was bleeding in his cell when Mr. Story got to work that morning early at 6:30 in the morning and made his rounds. And Mr. Gregory himself was able to tell Mr. Story why he was in his cell bleeding. And Mr. Story did not go along with the lie. He was encouraged to tell that Mr. Gregory had fallen on soap in the shower. He refused to tell that lie, and because he did refuse to tell that lie, the family was able to sue for wrongful death. But Mr. Story was then fired. He was even accused of selling drugs in the jail when a man that upright would never do that. And then he went through that situation, and the charges were, as I understand it, they may have been dismissed, but he was ordered to get his job back in the jail. Memphis Shelby County Jail didn't want an honest corrections officer like Mr. Story, who wouldn't go along with the lie, and they did not give him his job back. So he went to the Cochran firm, that's the Jenny Cochran firm, to get his job back through lawsuit. And they said, we cannot represent you against Memphis Shelby County Jail, Mr. Story, because we have a conflict of interest. Our managing partner, Julian Bolton, is also a commissioner over that jail, and the commission owns and operates the jail. So essentially, that would put him in the position of suing himself. So he could not allow that law firm to take the case. But a year later, when my brother was secretly arrested and murdered in that same jail, the Cochran firm took our case, but they tricked us, the Neal family, and never filed suit. So these are the reasons why people are censored. They don't want you to know how corrupt, how thoroughly corrupt this country is regarding its legal system, and they do not want you to know about certain lives being minimized to the point that they are told by federal judges, like I was, that the case is immaterial. The case of fraud to keep my family from getting due process of law regarding my brother's secret arrest and murder was ruled immaterial by Federal Judge Batten, B-A-T-T-E-N, in Atlanta, Georgia. That's why I have such sympathy for Troy Davis, and I tried to help him, because he was also counting on Georgia courts, which I know to be corrupt. And so these things are soldier makers. This is how many of us who are human rights advocates became human rights advocates, because we ourselves know that the system has a very, very corrupt underside, and we fight to bring that information forward every day to you on radio, doing our social media posts, and some people are able to do it on film. We bring you this information because the media was not bringing you this information until very recent years, and we want to thank the media for giving it more press. And this is the reason why President Obama, went to the prison to visit. This is the reason why the Pope went to the prison to visit. It's because of the work that we're continually doing, and not us only. It's the sacrifices by the prisoners themselves when they go on hunger strikes, when they even riot. Even the riots have brought attention to the extreme punishment. Solitary confinement is extreme punishment. After just a few days in solitary confinement, I read that the brain, the actual shape of the brain, can change. People who are sane sometimes lose their sanity in solitary confinement. I want to congratulate Ms. Anna, who is with us today, on raising such a strong son in those 17 years while he was with her. From the time he was newborn to age 17, she must have instilled in him a great self-protection, a great sense of I can. And he went through that 9 years of solitary, and he came out. She told us about it last week, and I ask you to listen to our previous tapes on Blog Talk Radio at Human Rights Demand. She told us that she was so relieved that he came out with all of his marbles. He had his right thinking. And so she was so pleased about that. And we congratulate her on whatever she instilled in her young son, that not even knowing what he had ahead of him to face, she had raised him to be so strong that he was able to withstand even 9 years in solitary without cracking up. And I'm not condemning people who do crack up. I'm just saying that some people are stronger than others, and it's for us who are stronger to bear the burden of the weak. We're to not be like the bad Samaritans. We're supposed to be good Samaritans. When we see someone fallen by the side of the road, it is not an opportunity for us to capitalize off of them by earning prison profits, by buying jail stock. It is time for us to help pick them up, clean them up, and help them rejoin society. You know, even animals do that. Surely, we can be better than animals. Even if you believe that human beings are only a higher form of animals, you've got to acknowledge that there's something special about human beings that monkeys don't have. There's something special about human beings that fish and birds and bears and giraffes don't have. And we've got the human spirit, and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights will tell you the rights that go along with being human, and they're called human rights. It's not Muslim rights. It's not Christian rights. It's not black rights or Hispanic rights or white rights. We've got human rights, and that's what we are promoting on Human Rights Demand. And I want to let you know that I appreciate you joining us today, and I want to say this to you. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has, and it never will. That was said to us by Frederick Douglass, who was a great human rights advocate against slavery in the 1800s. And his words that he spoke at that time are no less true today. Now, I'm going to give Ms. Anna an opportunity to close out with you and maybe say some of the things I've said to you in Spanish. We will call it a day after that. Ms. Anna, are you able to translate some of what I said in Spanish so that they can know what I said?
Yes.
We have only about 3 minutes, so just give them the gist of it, that everybody has human rights. Okay, thank you.
I will. La señora Mary O'Neill dijo que aquí estamos todos los para pelear por los derechos humanos de los presos. Ellos no son animales, ellos son humanos. Hasta los animales en la calle se les da clemencia. So nosotros tenemos que seguir tratando a los presos como si fueran humanos, no animales. La semana pasada yo hablé cómo mi hijo tuvo 9 años y un roto y gracias a Dios salió con buena mente. Pues todos nosotros, si quieren seguir oyendo la cinta, Mary la tiene grabada, ustedes la pueden escuchar, y estamos aquí toda la semana, está Mary, para oír, para hablar sobre los problemas que hay en la cárcel. Que todos pasen un buen día, que pasen una buena noche. God bless you, and see you next week. There you go, Mary. Hello? Mary? Okay, I must have finished. Oh,
I wish I could share all the love that's in my heart.